May it please the court. My name is Ed Byrne. My attorney number is 11786. I represent the plaintiff's appellants in this case. And we are here because the district court granted Boulder County's motion to dismiss my client's 1983 and Colorado constitutional takings claims because they asserted that we failed to exhaust our administrative remedies. This was an extraordinary motion when I first saw it because it goes against 10 years of policy and practice in Boulder County. In fact, the subdivision exemption process has been the only process available for challenging building lot denials. Even in the code, it states that the subdivision exemption process requires a public hearing before the commissioners. There's no staff discretion. So when they claimed that we had not exhausted the remedies, we received the Boulder County trifecta. We had to do everything that could be required as part of the subdivision exemption process. It took more than a year. The subdivision exemption itself was to determine whether a building lot existed. A limited impact special use review was required because of potential site disturbance. And then the site plan review process, which deals with home size, location, and design, all were required as part of our administrative remedies based on the direction we received in the letter from the county. At that point, I did not represent the plaintiffs, and that's typically the case. They received a letter from the county indicating that if the code was amended or additional information was requested, another review could be made at some point in the future. In additional information, you could go through a normal process. This is all language that's totally inconsistent with the notion that this was a final determination in June of 2007. And then in a follow-up letter in August of 2007.
You know, any issue in your briefs about whether it was a final determination?
Absolutely.
Where?
From the very beginning.
Where in your opening brief did you raise that this wasn't a final determination to begin with, that didn't have to be appealed to the BOA?
In both the opening brief and in the reply brief, I would want to check the brief to determine precisely where I made that argument, but it certainly was our point from the very beginning that you directed us to go here, and the late nature of the letter was such that it didn't suggest there was any other option.
That's a little bit of a shift in argument, you know. It wasn't the final decision versus we've been misled into our administrative remedies. What was wrong with the trial court's ruling on that as far as saying, if you look at the letter talks about, you know, there's two ways to correct the situation. And the situation was the problem with the combination of the deed. And in other words, the judge ruled the letter wasn't misleading. What was wrong with the judge's analysis of whether it was misleading or not?
Well, the judge looked into the Boulder Code at the authority that is written into that code for the Board of Adjustments to look at any legal interpretation, but the court didn't consider the possibility that, you know, everything that the county staff does is a legal interpretation. So when there are avenues in the code suggesting subdivision exemption is the way to go.
Looking specifically at the trial court's written decision, pages 8 and 9, there's a long paragraph where the trial court seems to hone in on the language of this letter that you suggest was misleading. And the trial court analyzes that language and says it wasn't misleading because. What was the trial court wrong? So I guess what I'm asking you, why was the trial court wrong in its analysis?
The letter, which had been the same letter the county used for years, didn't consider in the context of the policy and practice, which was that the commissioners made these decisions about whether building lots would be recognized, and suggested that this was one avenue that you could follow, suggested by staff, but that there was another option, the Board of Adjustment option, that was in the code and was there, and any potential victim or claimant should know that and use it. But the fact was, and we added this as an appendix to our brief, that had never happened before in Boulder County.
Was that ever factually determined by the trial court, that there had never been a appeal to the BOA before?
We requested in our response to the motion to, the motion to reconsider that we, that such a hearing could take place, then this, the Medina case does suggest that a limited evidentiary hearing to resolve disputed jurisdictional facts can occur.
You're not disputing, though, there was a provision in the land use code about appealing decisions of the land use department to the Board of Adjustment. Are you?
That language is in the code, but it applies to everything the staff does. So if you have a course that's in the code saying you should go this direction, which the definition of parcel says it's building lot, on one deed unless accepted by the Board of County Commissioners.
But doesn't the provision in the land use code talk about you can appeal to the Board of Adjustments a denial of a building permit? And wasn't the building land application to the land department actually asking for a building permit on that third parcel?
No, it's actually, building lot determinations come before you can ask for a building lot, a building permit. And that's the other issue that's raised by their concern that, you know, this building permit expired in 1975. Well, that simply means that you're going to have to meet new provisions in the building code. You're going to have to deal with things like site plan review as they get adopted into the code. But for purposes of determining whether a building lot had been recognized, that was done when the building permit issued in 1975 by the land use director then in place, based on the code that he was interpreting. And for this to lie for 20 some odd years as a silent reversal of a prior approval created a huge problem for my client 22 years later.
And Mr. Burton, I want to hone in on that, because it seems to me that it wasn't what changed with Boulder, but your client made a whole lot of conveyances and transactions after that point that resulted in all these parcels coming together as one. Boulder didn't do that. Your client did that, and thereby made himself subject to some other provisions of the code.
Well, I mean, when you look at the record and you see what those transactions entailed, there were dozens between 1967, when he acquired the first parcel, and 2006. And only one in that time frame involved all of the deeds on one parcel, and it was the convenience deed coming out of his divorce, in which he corrected the fact that he used a middle initial on one deed and a full name on the other, and changed it so that all of these parcels would be held in the same name. Convenience deed, it wasn't a sale, it wasn't a purchase. To the extent deed merger relates to a notion that we're trying to understand the intentions of the seller and the expectations of the buyer, it wasn't triggered by this convenience deed, which was simply correcting a name change. And yet the effect of this deed merger rule, which is self-executing and ends up eliminating a piece of land as a buildable lot that was recognized in 1975 and was valued in the mid-200s at more than at about $1 million, is that silently, you know, the essentially the plaintiffs were dead men walking. They'd lost the security for the loans that they'd acquired against that property, which is one of the things you can do with property.
But they hadn't lost it as a result of what the county did retroactively or anything. The law was in place. Your client did something that subjected him to the law.
The question I think that should be asked now is was that fair, given the nature of the governmental interest in this deed merger rule? Because there's two ways the government, that Boulder County could prevent a home from being built on this parcel at the mouth of Boulder Canyon. One is they could say that right never existed. But if my clients had built the home in 1975, they were given permission to build, it would be there still. And the fact that he corrected his name in 1985 would have no meaning. But because of this deed merger rule, quietly, without anybody knowing it, without notice to anyone, including
you're deemed to know the law. I mean, your client is deemed to know the law. The law was there.
He's presumed to know the law, but the law itself needs to be fair in its application. It can't simply be convenient from the county's perspective.
But what is unfair about the application? Your client wasn't singled out. The law was pre-existing. It applied across the board to anybody who did this. What's unfair about that?
Well, the fact is there is a process for going to the county and dealing with this automatic merger, the subdivision exemption process, which we followed. But it didn't turn out to be an answer for my client in this case, and we believe it's because the county doesn't want anything built there, and they're using this automatic deed merger rule as their tool for removing this development right from a lot that in 1975 was recognized as a buildable lot. And that's a very large taking held up by a very slender thread.
Well, it's not as if, though, the county changed the rules in the middle of the game. The rules have always been there. It's your client's actions that subjected him to different rules.
But I mean, this is an innocent action in every sense of that word, in that it wasn't an actual sale to a different purchaser who was being told by the face of this deed, this is three lots that really is only one buildable lot. And the fact is that with respect to two of them, with the houses on them, under the code language that deals with deed merger, they would have been recognized. It should have been recognized anyway, because it was a lawful use on an existing parcel. And the fact that they were listed on a single deed doesn't result in their merger. By the code, the county recognizes that that's a building lot.
And wasn't that a question of, you know, basically the interpretation of the land use code? And your position was that the department misinterpreted the land use code? And wasn't your remedy an appeal to the Board of Adjustment, as opposed to, okay, we've got this situation, is there a way to get essentially a variance from the situation?
Well, the dilemma in that after the fact assertion that there was this other option is that it had not been used before, and more importantly, if we've gone to the Board of Assessment, given the letter that we had received, we weren't happy with that result. Our only appeal was to district court. When we got into district court and filed our claims, the county presumably would then file a motion to dismiss for failing to exhaust the subdivision exemption administrative remedy, and they can't have it both ways.
Mr. Barron, can you walk me through the land use code as far as the process? Once there's that BLD decision, what is the process the code tells you to take before you get judicial review?
The look to the subdivision exemption language, because what you're asking is for the commissioners to recognize this lot, which you believed should not have been unrecognized, particularly in this automatic way. But you look at 1812A2 is the language about parcels that talks about it. You know, A1 says that if a lot has a lawful existing use, it shall be recognized. A3 says that if a lot is a parcel of land within a subdivision, within subdivided land, then it shall be recognized. And this language is in there because of the concerns expressed in the early 1980s that Senate Bill 85 was making it difficult for the county to enforce, because it only the ability to withhold a building permit from a lot that had been sold it could not exist. So they wanted to create an interim step that allowed you to go through the commissioners to get a lot recognized that would otherwise be deemed merged because it was held in the same ownership.
So is there somewhere in the code where it says once you've got that BLD decision that you disagree with, you go the route of the exemption process and then you do an appeal, or you go directly to an appeal, or one is in lieu of the other? What does the code tell you to do?
Well, everything in the code points, other than the administrative, the Board of Adjustment language, which covers everything, everything in the code with the definition of parcel, which is at 18183, says it's a lot unless if lots are held in the same ownership, it's one lot unless recognized as a buildable lot by the commissioners, which again points you to the subdivision exemption language. And 18121A2 is the language that says the commissioners can recognize a lot that is vacant and undeveloped and held in contiguous ownership based on the criteria in 9-1000, which is the subdivision exemption section in the code. And it's this, essentially an after the fact assertion of a remedy that had been missed, even though we'd spent a year and a half pursuing the remedy they told us to take, that is the reason we should reverse the district courts.
Let me ask one question, if I may, Judge. Two questions, if I may. First, you just said, well, the commissioners could have interpreted the, you know, the land use code to have allowed us this building lot, and they didn't. I don't read your brief as challenging the summary judgment, not the summary judgment, the court's, well, the, I guess, the judgment with respect to the Board of County Commissioners' action, other than the RIPRA claim. I don't read your brief as challenging the validity of the Board of County Commissioners' action or the district court's determination with respect to that, other than the RIPRA claim.
We chose not to appeal the Rule 106 side of this because once you're put into this subdivision exemption process, it has sufficient discretion built into it that you wouldn't have a right to a result.
So you really haven't appealed or appealed from the district court's determination and the Board of County Commissioners' application or interpretation of the land use code. Instead, what you're saying is, well, the result ends up violating RIPRA.
Throughout our subdivision exemption process, we raised the issue that they didn't have authority to not recognize this as a buildable lot.
I understand
that. We submitted ourselves to that process.
But on appeal, you haven't argued that the Board of County Commissioners misinterpreted the land use code.
We argued that they didn't have authority under the code to not recognize this building lot, either the commissioners or the staff. Thank you, Your Honor.
Good morning, David Hughes, Deputy County Attorney on behalf of the appellees. There's two primary issues on appeal in this case. The first is whether the district court correctly applied the exhaustion doctrine to the land use director's determination that the property owner's property interest consisted of only one building lot under the county's land use code. And the second is whether the landowners adequately pled a RIPRA claim. There was a third issue that was briefed, and that is whether the landowners adequately alleged the existence of a constitutionally protected property interest. But you only get to that issue if this court finds the district court erred in its exhaustion analysis. But the fact is the district court didn't err in its exhaustion analysis. None of the three arguments raised by the landowners indicates that the district court should be overturned in that respect. The first argument goes to what Judge Daly was questioning counsel about, and that is the letter. Whether the letter presented in and of itself presented an alternate avenue of review is a fact question that this court would review under a clear error standard.
It's a fact question?
Yes.
Really? So the interpretation of that letter is a question of fact because you didn't take any evidence in addition to the document, did you? Was there any testimony by Denise Grimm as to what she meant when she wrote the letter?
There was no hearing in this case, based on the documents.
So why is the trial court in a better position than we are to determine what the meaning of that letter is?
Because I think that the district court was looking at the letter itself and considering that as evidence presented by the landowners as to whether it was or was not a indication that the appeal process was something other than what was indicated in the code. The district court, in fact, found that the August 10, 2000 letter does not describe an alternative avenue for appeal. There's no clear error because that decision was supported by the letter itself, which presents the subdivision exemption process as an available option for the landowners, but it doesn't specify that it's an appeal process or that the Board of Adjustment appeal process isn't available. The second argument presented by the landowners relates to the
question.
Yeah.
Your brief, and I may have mixed this up, counsel. In your brief, did you say when the agency directs the party to the appropriate administrative remedies, those administrative remedies must be exhausted?
Right.
Did you say that in your brief?
I did. And that's
okay. But your agency didn't direct Mr. Sanchez to the Board of Adjustment appeal process, did it?
I think it did. Under the land use code, it specifies the option fairly clearly.
That's how it directed it, through yes. The land use code.
Right. Section 4-1201A of the land use code states that appeals to the Board of Adjustment may be taken by any person aggrieved by any decision of the land use director made in the course of administration or enforcement of Article 4 or any related provision of this code. And, you know, the idea that the staff could somehow override a legislative decision is a little bit disturbing. If the staff made some explicit direction, then that would be a closer question, I think, for this court or for the district court in parsing through the facts. But since the staff really was just pointing to one option in the code, and the code was available for review by the landowner, I don't think it's fair to draw an inference that somehow an action by the staff overrules a legislative decision by the county commissioners to provide this appeal process. In fact, it's not just a legislative decision by the county commissioners, it's a legislative decision by the state of Colorado, because the Board of Adjustment appeal option is also set forth in Section 3028.118.1A, Colorado Revised Statutes.
What about Mr. Burns' point that had his client appealed to the BOA unsuccessfully and gone to court, you would have then claimed failure to exhaust administrative remedies because of a failure to go through this subdivision exemption process?
I think the only way that the failure to go through the subdivision exemption process would have affected a subsequent lawsuit would have been related to the takings claim. That has to do with the ripeness of the takings claim. If he had an alternate avenue of relief in terms of getting the additional lot, we certainly would have argued that he failed to pursue that option. But he can pursue that option at any time. That is not an appeal process. That's an application process. If the court had made a decision on the basis of ripeness of the takings claim, it could have been dismissed without prejudice. He could have gone through the subdivision exemption process, if he hadn't gotten the relief he wanted, then gone ahead and filed his inverse condemnation claim. His best option would have been to pursue both remedies. If he really felt that there was an error made by staff in administering the building lot determination, he should have appealed to the Board of Adjustment within 30 days. And he either could have gone through that process first, waited for a decision of the Board of Adjustment, filed his 106A4 claim, asked that the court put that on hold while he goes through the subdivision exemption process. If he gets the relief that he wants through the subdivision exemption process, then the 106A4 claim becomes moot. If not, he can add his takings claim to the complaint. I think that would have been the best process, and that he certainly would have covered his bases there. The second argument raised by the landowners related to exhaustion has to do with the argument that the Board of Adjustment appeal was really only a theoretical option, and the county would not have allowed it. But the landowners have the burden of proving jurisdiction in this case. And even in their motion for reconsideration, they did not present sufficient evidence for the district court to make a determination that the Board of Adjustment wouldn't have proceeded with an appeal had an appeal been timely filed. Furthermore, I don't believe deciding a theoretical issue about whether an appeal would have been pursued is the best way to resolve this issue. If the landowners had filed their Board of Adjustment appeal and the county had refused to process it, that would have answered the question definitively, and there wouldn't have been an exhaustion question. The third argument related.
Why would the county have refused to process an appeal that is authorized under the land use code?
I really don't know. I don't know why the county would have refused to process the appeal. That's the argument that the landowners are making.
I thought the landowners were making the argument that it's never been used before. No one knows about it.
And that could be true. There's certainly no evidence in the record that shows that there was an appeal on the specific issue of whether the land use director correctly interpreted a building lot determination. But there could be a number of reasons for that. It could be that the code provisions are so straightforward that whoever was looking at the issues decided that it wasn't worth pursuing an appeal on the issues. And it could be that they decided that the subdivision exemption process, they'd have a better shot and would be less expensive to go through the subdivision exemption process than pursue both avenues of appeal. The fact of the matter is, the Board of County Commissioners does have significant discretion on the subdivision exemption process, whereas the Board of Adjustment would be looking at the narrower issue of whether the staff made an error in administering the code. Even looking at this case objectively, you know, we did brief the issue of whether there was an error in the interpretation of Section 18.121 of the code defining whether a parcel is a building lot. And really, there wasn't an error there wasn't a good argument that there was an error to begin with. So it makes sense that there would be a lot of circumstances where a landowner would simply choose to forego the right to appeal because they don't think they have much of a shot, and pursue the subdivision exemption process where the Board of County Commissioners has the discretion to grant additional lots.
Mr. Hughes, does the land use code expressly state how you review the commissioner's decision either to grant or deny the exemption?
The land use code doesn't specify the avenue for review. It's reviewed through a 106A4 claim, Colorado Rules of Civil Procedure. The third exhaustion argument raised by the landowners is that the Board of Adjustment's variance powers are limited. And that's true, the Board of Adjustment's variance powers are limited, but there's a distinction between the variance process and the appeal process. That distinction is made both in the code, Section 3100A1 versus A18, in Colorado Revised Statutes. Variance is really relief from strict application of the code. So it's a given in a variance process that the code applies. It's not an appeal of the determination of whether the code applies or not. It's the argument that the landowner, typically because of the configuration of the lot, shouldn't have to comply with the strict terms of the variance because of hardship.
Is the subdivision exemption process a type of variance process?
No.
because the variance process deals with relief from strict application of the code. The subdivision exemption process is an application process that grants the county commissioners discretion to add an additional lot. So the commissioners would be applying the code because the code specifically allows for subdivision exemptions, whereas the Board of Adjustment would be varying from this from the strict meaning of the code based on hardship.
So, Mr. Hughes, why then should a homeowner be required to do both to exhaust administrative remedies? I guess I'm confused because the remedy being sought by the homeowner in each instance is a different remedy. Okay.
Yeah.
So the only way to get the variance remedy is to do what the homeowner did here. Okay. It couldn't have gotten that variance remedy by appealing to BOA. So it's gone to the body with the only authority to make that decision. That body has made the decision. Why can't it appeal that decision, or not appeal it, but use a 106 action?
I may have been unclear earlier. I don't believe that the landowners were required to go through both processes. I think they had the choice of going through either process or both.
They went through one. So they did
right.
Do either. But you're saying that you stated a claim in court they had to go through both, essentially, because you made a motion to dismiss for failure to exhaust, and the court granted it.
Only with respect to whether the land use director erred in his determination. We did not move to dismiss the 106A4 claim based on the Board of County Commissioners' decision. That claim was actually presented to the district court, and the district court decided it, but that hasn't been appealed. That's correct. So for the reasons stated in the brief and presented to you today, I would ask that the district court's determination be upheld by this court. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel, for your arguments. The case will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course.